Fire up the barbecues. Grab a buddy. Grab a beverage. Bust out that Blackstone, Vinny. It's time for the morning tailgate.
Am I in charge of barbecuing today?
Obviously,
am I the grilling master?
I was looking at you.
Jeez.
Got to do everything around here.
No groceries.
No
After
tequila.
You left, Clay Wayne got the lobster, and we we splurged.
Yeah, it's not something you can sift around in the refrigerator. You got to eat it as is right away.
No, I know that didn't actually happen yesterday, because yesterday was a hairy day.
Yesterday was a day.
It was a day.
It was a day all around.
It was definitely one of those, when you're in this business, there's days like yesterday, and you both welcome them. Those kind of days, right?
As journalists, you dread them. Yeah, it's a love-hate type deal.
Yeah, because obviously there was massive breaking news in Las Vegas, and were you surprised how nationally it kind of blew up? Because every station that I was listening to when I was on my way to the facility, I was checking everywhere.
I was a little surprised at the national explosion, if you will. You know, it helps that UNLV is now ranked.
That's totally
and just the fact that, as we discussed yesterday on this show, despite not having all the details of what
it
we
was
did
ever
know,
evolving yesterday.
It was evolving as the tailgate was ongoing. But what was fascinating is the precedent now it is setting.
Exactly.
And the ripple effect it has already created, not just within the program, but throughout the college football landscape. And for those that are just tuning in or saying, what are you guys talking about? Matt Sluka, now I guess a former UNLV football quarterback.
The era is over.
Decided to walk away from a program because he is alleging that the university did not make good on certain promises regarding quote-unquote NIL.
Right. $100,000.
$100,000 is the reported number.
That's what he's saying.
That being said, the university has since come out with a statement saying there were no formal promises made, and the things that he is asking or alleging is not essentially legal in the pay-for-play world in college football. There's a lot of legal jargon in there. There's a lot of back and forth. What we do know is that story is far from over. What we also know is that another member of the UNLV football team, a running back, decided to leave the program, not citing NIL issues, but citing opportunity. And then we saw at various different schools around the country, Michigan being one of them, another player decides that he's going to use a red shirt because, as we were talking about, we asked the question, how many people know about this 3-game red shirt rule?
Right.
And it seems it seems to kind of set off a domino effect that was unimagined, I would say, 48 hours ago, because now all of a sudden he's getting a red shirt year in Michigan because of lack of playing time.
Right.
So,
yeah, a USC lineman too, and a running back from UNLV.
As I said, so two guys at UNLV now all of a sudden off the team. Michigan, USC. It's fascinating, Clay. I mean, what are we doing?
It's a deadline.
It feels like a trade deadline. It feels like a waiver wire type situation.
Yeah, ADs, schools have to be prepared for this week 4 deadline that comes up, and it pretty much says, hey, time has expired, and everyone's going to go for their own reasons. But the UNLV one, it remains kind of a mystery. It's a question mark. Like, had money been ponied up, you know, had you been able to negotiate it further, would you be back on the team? Is this going to be
a
tactic? Like down the road, maybe next year, you're like, hey, I didn't get that extra zero.
This is the hold out.
Right, yeah.
Walk out.
you hold somebody to the flame, right? how quickly can universities and organizations like this and turn around and get money?
Yeah, no hold in, no hold out. You have walk-ons, but this feels like a walk-out type situation for these student-athletes that are now using their power, I guess, that they have. Because until these deals are contract with legal attorneys and fancy lawyers and things like that for the school, not just the NIL collectives that are paying them, but the schools that are getting some kind of promises or guarantees that if something happens here, you know, they're still here. They're still within the program. So,
and just to clarify,
the Matt Sluka clause.
Yeah, what they're saying You know, the way this works, you have an NIL collective, which is the body. I don't even know what to call it, but the group that handles the NIL money that's affiliated with the school loosely, I guess, to some extent. But what the Sluka family is saying is that a coach, somebody on the coaching staff, not affiliated necessarily with the NIL, made some promises of $100,000.
Saying, hey, we'll get this done for you.
Right.
A verbal.
No assistant coach has that authority to do. And I don't know. No one knows exactly what was said. If we go down the path of maybe that a conversation like that actually happened, maybe the coach said, hey, look, it's Vegas. Should be able to get you $100,000. And maybe he meant if you have an agent that can, because what kids are allowed to do is, above and beyond the NIL, collective money that the group that's officially affiliated with the school can pay the players, you also have the right to go market yourself. Like if you're Matt Sluka and you have an agent, you could go to Caesar's Palace, you could go to one of the properties, you could go to a local restaurant, you can go to a realty company, whatever, and say, hey, this is the quarterback at UNLV or Auburn or Alabama or wherever. Are you interested in doing a deal with him, to represent your company? And so maybe it was said like, hey, it's, there's a lot of ways to make money here in Las Vegas, a lot of support for the program. You should be able, as the quarterback, you should be able to go get $100,000. But what they're literally saying is that an assistant coach told them and promised them $100,000. And the university is saying that never happened. Nobody had the authority to even make that
well,
kind of a promise.
They said nothing formal ever happened, so I don't think they ever refuted that
well,
discussion.
That's legal
happened, but that's
jargon.
What I mean. So that's why their statement's kind of very doesn't necessarily refute anything the Sluka family or Matt said in his statement. They're saying in terms of a formal decree, nothing took place. Again, this is. There was a giant misstep somewhere, miscommunication all through the way. And my biggest takeaway, Clay, is what you said yesterday. Those Holy Cross kids.
Yeah, every time.
Got to keep an eye.
You turn your back on them.
Well, I'll tell you something. Talking to some of the, because some of the, obviously, players in the Raiders locker room, especially the younger players, some of them started their college careers before NIL, and by the time their career ended in college, NIL was in full bloom.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them completely missed the NIL. So a lot of these kids, a lot of especially the younger players, and I know we're joking about Holy Cross, but some of the players that I was talking to said it's time to put something in place because the calls that I was getting and the calls my high school coach was getting from agents saying that they could get me. Because if you're on the NFL radar, if you're in an NFL locker room right now, you are on a radar in the college football world and the agent world and all of it. So I'm sitting here, as players are saying, like I'm sitting here, fielding all these calls or my parents are, or my former offensive line coach in high school, guys telling them, hey, I can get your guy a lot of money. It's a tough predicament to be in if you're a young kid that's all of a sudden this is being introduced. There was a story about one player told a story about how right before a bowl game, a couple of their star players went to the coach and said, unless you pay me X amount of dollars, I'm not going to play in the bowl game. Well, what happened? I don't know, but they played. So you tell me what happened. Was there money that was paid? Was it not paid? I don't know.
And how many other examples are like this that never get told? Stories of other students that, like, maybe I was lured and now it's like, all right, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut and just continue on
right
through this.
And these are all off the record conversations, but telling us their experiences. So yes, obviously there's that's happening every single day. And now what Sluka has done is introduced this. I might just bolt three games into the season so that I can maximize one more year of being able to make money. There was a star player for the Raiders yesterday who was saying, look, there's no guarantees in the NFL unless you're somebody that is going to be a top 10 pick or for sure first round pick. there's no guarantees where you're going to get drafted, whether you're going to make the team, how much money you're going to make in the NFL. So if somebody's telling you right now, I could get you $100,000 or $300,000, whatever the number you want to put on it, that's compelling stuff for somebody that there's no guarantee that I'll ever see this kind of money again in my future life. Because as this player told me, there were no guarantees for me. Like and if you look at where he was drafted, he was absolutely right. Like, I didn't really know. I kind of had an idea, but I didn't really know. And so for these kids and for the way it works right now, there's a lot. I must have heard the word Wild West 10 times yesterday and how it really is. And these are players that were in the direct fire of all of this and getting all kinds of calls and all kinds of offers and things like that. And so putting yourself – like, we don't blame Matt. If Sluka was offered something.
No, we said this yesterday.
Yeah.
Clay, we said it yesterday. I mean, we don't like the situation, but do we blame the kid? I mean, is he going to be playing on Sundays? Is this going to be his biggest payday maybe of his career?
In one lump.
Go for it.
Yeah, go for it.
Why not take advantage of an option that it gives you some wiggle room to go and try to better deal yourself?
Doesn't mean we have to like it. Doesn't mean we have to like the way that that's going to paint college football landscape moving forward, but we understand it.
We also don't like that USC's in the Big Ten or that UNLV, now they're staying in the Mountain West. But Utah,
yeah, how about that?
But Utah
Late
State's
night.
Gone to the Pac-12 and Arizona's gone to the – we don't like that, but we understand it, don't we?
The stories didn't stop yesterday. They just didn't – they did not stop yesterday. Just when you thought, you know, especially UNLV stuff with Sluka. All right, it's – 8:30, it's 9 o'clock, mm-hmm. Golden Knights game, preseason openers, finishing up, good crowd. 17,400 showed up last night. And then all of a sudden, about 9:30, Bruce Feldman drops a bomb that Air Force and UNLV sticking around in the Mountain West.
And that makes both of the conferences neither conference now, the Pac-12 or the Mountain West. Have the necessary amount of teams.
Yeah, they still got work to do.
Yeah.
But UNLV doesn't care right now because they got apparently paid.
Almost like they're expected to have like 25 to 30 million signing bonus for just staying in the Mountain West and no penalty for leaving.
Yeah.
Because this is definitely a school that can't afford to deal with an exorbitant like $17 million penalty.
For That's not going to happen.
From people that I've talked to, I do wonder if UNLV's ultimate goal is to get to the Big 12. Now this gives them now they're flexible enough because the Big 12 can't bring another team in or UNLV, I was told anyway, until 2026. So this gives them a couple years to and some money, obviously.
Yeah.
They just got their NIL money or whatever it is that you want to call it.
Their NIL money.
And that's the thing. Like I know that in some quarters, Sluk is getting kind of crushed for leaving his teammates high and dry. And we get that, and there is that element. But it's hard for me to really, you know, like look down on him when right in the middle of a season, all these schools are making determinations on. You can make the case that Utah State just bailed on the Mountain West Conference, just like Sluka just bailed on UNLV to some extent. So like, all right, why am I supposed to blame this kid when the schools are doing it to their own conferences now, you know? So it's just the world that we're operating in.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. It's the same lessons that are being...
That's the lessons that are being taught.
But, I mean, I don't think... Who has an allegiance to the Mountain West? Who's sitting there being like, I played in the Mountain West? It's not the SEC, so I don't think anybody's sitting there being like,
well, what about
later
USC?
Utah State.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
You know
it's
what I'm
different.
Saying?
But that's what I mean.
But
in terms
of the
Mountain West.
It's in principle, it's the same exact thing.
I don't
like
think the
USC
UNLV,
bailed on or USC and UCLA bailed on the Pac-12.
I don't think anybody, I don't think the UNLV really cares what conference they're in. I think they care about what that contract money looks like.
Of course.
Exactly, and $5 million annually on their football money, and that wasn't enough.
Yeah, and so you're sitting there now with the college football playoff, like, yeah, you know, that Power Four now, you want to be in that for the college playoff, but if you're UNLV and you're banking on a guy like Barry Odom, hey, we're going to be at the top of the group of five, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? We're going to get in regardless mm-hmm. and still get paid. Who cares? Who cares what conference you call us in? We're gonna play well. So it's a fascinating scene.
It's all going to come down to money is my point.
At the bottom line, it always does.
Right. UNLV will make their next play of where they end up will all be predicated on maximizing their ability to make money. So if it's the Big 12 that has the bigger TV contract that disperses more money for them, that would be where they want to be. That's what this is all being driven about, driven on, including what Matt Slucka just did to leave his teammates in the middle of what looks to be an outstanding, promising, maybe historical season for UNLV. He's being driven by money, and when the schools themselves are doing that, I can't look disparagingly on the kid, other than to say what Vince just said: we don't like it,
yeah,
but we understand it.
Two things can be true there.
Of course.
702-365-9200. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, Raiders legend Lincoln Kennedy is going
to
join us.
Right, trying to get to the bottom of the line on this offensive line.
I saw him.
There's going to be a lot of.
I saw him in the press box last week. I think he could still suit up. If the Raiders need help, I think he's got it still. We're going to go behind the enemy lines at 8:30. Mary Kay Cabot, longtime beat reporter for the Cleveland Browns. She's fantastic. So we're going to hear from her of what the Cleveland Brown perspective is coming into Las Vegas. But real quick, I guess let me pose this to the question, since we started the show with it, might as well continue the conversation. Who would get real NIL money? Any athlete from back in the day in college? Like,
oh God,
who's the
where
name?
Do we start?
The first name that comes to my mind, maybe that was just because where I was, I feel like Reggie Bush would have broken Vince Young.
Mm-hmm. Peyton Manning. I mean, John Elway. If you want to go all the way back.
Yeah, I mean, John Elway would have
huge recruit.
Would have broken.
Barry Sanders.
Just for multiple sports.
Eric Dickerson did, and he'll tell you. He got NIL.
Clay, who's the first name that comes to your mind?
I would think of like somebody who could like parlay it into a big senior season, right? Like somebody who could sit there and draw interest.
Deion?
And like, right. That's what I was thinking. Yeah. Like somebody who could have that major flash, and it's like, everybody on that team was humongously, highly touted, and everyone felt like, there's eight starters on this team left and right. Vince Young could have done that.
All those guys that you're talking about were five-star recruits anyway. How about the guys that, like a Barry Sanders? I mean, he was a big-time recruit, but he went to Oklahoma State. Would he have stayed at Oklahoma State? Would Devontae Adams have stayed at Fresno State in the NIL world after the year that he had his first season on the field? It would have been his redshirt freshman season. He exploded. He and Derek Carr paired up for just astronomical numbers. The answer would be no, probably. There's no way. Somebody would have come calling with a bag of money to get Devontae Adams to USC or to Michigan or to wherever, because he had made that a guy that was a no-star recruit basically blows up. That's who we should be looking at, because the guys that we're mentioning, Peyton Manning was the biggest recruit in the country, as was John Elway, as was Reggie Bush. He was a five-star kid out of San Diego. They would have made massive money just coming out of high school. But what about those guys that somewhere along the line exploded? Like, who the heck is that kid over at Fresno State or a place like that stayed back in their day because there was no transfer portal? That's the other part of it. Remember, the transfer portal is a relatively new thing as well. You used to have to sit out a full season to be able to transfer, number one. Number two, you had to get your current school to let you out of your scholarship. Number three, sometimes they told you, yeah, we'll let you out of the scholarship, but you can't go to any of the school that's on our – you're not going to any of our conference schools. You're not going to anybody that's on our schedule. You're not going to go over there just because we don't want you to go over there. So they could control to an extent where you could go. Now you just – leave. You have a transfer portal to be able to do that. So much has changed. That's a good question. Who would have stayed back in the day? I would say less than 50% would have stayed. Guys that blew up while they were in college.
Oh my God. The amount of activity that there would have been. But I'm just, my mind's going, can you imagine if Shohei Ohtani enrolled in like LSU or something to play baseball,
right?
And then got NIL money. Like, oh man,
he'd be making more than the coach would. They'd be like $8 million coaches. I'll make that much.
Like those Miami football teams. Yeah. Like,
well, they were Miami, getting paid.
let's
wait. Time out.
What if
a bunch of these dudes were getting paid?
Right. Yeah. We're not saying
I know
that,
but that's the funny part of it is that it's out in the open now. But Eric will tell you exactly what he got. It was laughable, and so many others that you just kept it under wraps. But somehow, some way, yeah, your job is to turn on the sprinklers every day over at the park. Okay, what time do I got to be there? Do you really think you got to be there? You don't have to be there. I'm just saying that that's your job when anybody asks. You're selling cars for me at my car dealership. You know, here's $500 every week.
Just drive by the lot once a week.
You get a business card with a couple $100 bills, you know, paper clip to bind it. Yeah,
the $100 handshake.
Yeah.
All of that was going
on. The Pony
on.
Express.
Yes. And everywhere else. Come on.
It's fascinating, man. It's kind of mentally draining to think about, if I'm being honest, just because there's no rules. And so when you look at, and we were talking about agents yesterday, and just somebody found this loophole. Somebody found, and maybe it's not even considered a loophole because maybe it was just miscommunication. The full story has not been told. But, Clay, I mean, we saw the domino effect. We've seen multiple players now within the last 24 hours make these business decisions and say,
yes,
you know what, I'm a punt this year. I'm going to try better next year.
It's an era of player empowerment, especially in certain sports like the NBA. And I think as we're starting to unravel this now, that even college athletes are starting to realize that they have power. And the question that starts to burn in me was like, since when did the Mountain West all of a sudden have millions of dollars just to give away?
Yeah,
is this now just because
from?
Member schools have left and they're going to bank some money on a penalty
all
fee?
All those penalty
and
fees?
And I'm like, yeah, we can hook you up with like, you know, 25, 30 mil, no problem. That one might need to be followed up. That money trail is one. It's like, really? When did that money all of a sudden show up?
And we, you know, just to put everything in context, we'll see if that money ever gets dispersed because there's a lawsuit right now by the Pac-12 against the Mountain West that said, no, that's illegal what you're trying, the exit fees and this fee and that fee. So we'll 50-50 that money ever gets paid to UNLV.
They slap an injunction on it. Next thing you know, that thing's tied up in court for
now,
years.
Now, what will happen is that since the Mountain West went from how many teams was it? 12? To 7 now? Well, let's just say it was 12.
Okay.
So now the TV deal that the Mountain West has we'll go from spreading that around by 12 teams to now 17 to 7 teams. So, yes, every school, every member school that remained will get more money just because they have a bigger piece of the pie because 5 or 6 teams have left.
Yeah, but that piece of the pie was only $5 million annually.
So now,
and even Boise State made a little bit more out of that, too.
True.
So
it's fascinating. Plus, nobody gets the money unless they get to 8 teams because there's no conference unless they get to 8
teams. Well, they still get the TV money. They get their TV money from whatever Fox One or whoever they have.
Well, who knows
with.
What that contract language is?
Could
if,
be.
You know what I mean? If
could be.
If they don't get to that number. Anyways, we're diving into a lot of different things. We were talking about business decisions at the end of Sunday. We continue to talk about them today. Antonio Pierce was asked about those business decisions. We'll get to the bottom of the business coming up.
That was on Sunday night following the loss at Allegiant Stadium to the Carolina Panthers, Antonio Pierce, Raiders head coach. We're back here on the Morning Tailgate. Vince, Vinny, and Clay here on R&R 920. Keep listening. We'll give you a chance to win Ron White tickets in about 12 minutes from now. All right, so when you have a press conference that comes out this week, everyone keeps peppering Antonio Pierce about business decisions. Which ones have been made? Have they been made? Who's them for? Yeah, and when does that end? When does that like come up to a moment where we have, you know, some clarity behind it? And will we ever get clarity?
Yeah, I mean, that was the big question. Obviously, he says that Sunday. As I said earlier in the week, it almost overshadowed how bad the game was, which I guess is a damage control situation if you are the Raiders because it takes the focus away. That being said, it then turned into, you know, everyone's now looking at the tape, trying to point fingers. Everybody's trying to guess who he was talking about. And we talked about yesterday, I think we differed on the fact, you know, you would probably err on the side of him not saying that.
I would.
I did not mind him saying that. I just wish it was a little more buttoned up in terms of not leaving it open-ended, not leaving the world to question and everyone else to be peppering him.
The only way that could have happened is if he'd specifically named some players, which would have made it a million times worse in my mind.
Right, but what he did yesterday now is kind of, I didn't know what the answer was to it, admittedly, but now I see what is fine. If it would have happened earlier in the week, I think it would have been fine. The fact that he says, it's taken care of in-house.
Which to me tells me, yeah, he learned his lesson.
Right.
Which is I from our perspective, and I was talking to some of the other reporters about this yesterday. From our perspective, we want all the honesty, But I have to look at things two different ways. All right, I'd love it. Obviously, it makes for better stories and talking points, and it's on national news and everything like that. But then I have to put myself in his shoes and his player's shoes, and no, I don't like it. I'd rather, if I was one of the players or if I was an assistant coach or somebody that was in his ear, I would have been like, let's just not go there, you know, because it just introduces, you know, cleanup that we have to now do. And questions that are going to be asked. And so I felt like yesterday was a little bit of growth for Antonio Pierce in that regard.
As my teacher, or not my teachers, my kids' teachers like to say, growth mindset.
There you go.
It's a growth mindset.
And that's what we always, and Antonio.
He's admitted it.
He's said it, yeah. It's a learning
curve. He hasn't said growth mindset. That would be hilarious if he did. But he's admitted. He says, I'm going to say some things, I'm going to figure it out as I go. But again, he met with the media yesterday trying to button up the situation of business decisions.
Antonio, as a coach, when you think about the kind of game that we saw on Sunday, are you curious on what the reaction is going to be? And do you have a sense of what your team's reaction?
We're ready to work. New week, 24-hour rule. You move on. You watch the film on Monday. And it's a new week, another opportunity.
Mentioned making decisions. Have you made decisions?
Yeah, it's in-house.
I think, you know, coaches, players, everyone talks about the 24-hour rule all the time, right? Like, yeah. Is it harder sometimes than other times?
To be honest, yeah, it is. But it's early in the season. It's week three. There's no panic button. We're not throwing out our parachutes and jumping off the plane. We're good. It's a loss, and it's a tough loss, and we move on.
Okay.
All right. All right, moving along then.
Yeah, we're going to turn the page on this. But yeah, very short answers.
Antonio's like, I'm done with this.
All right, I'm not going to expand any longer on any of this, even though I may have started it, but the less I say, the better now.
To your question, how are we going to find out? We're going to find out if there's any personnel changes. When we see somebody lined up someplace else, maybe, or somebody conspicuous, which I don't think is going to happen, but if it does, then we'll know what mm-hmm. he meant by that. Yeah.
What else that I thought was funny was talking about growth mindset and Antonio learning kind of on the fly, right? In terms of things, what to say. My colleague Kevin Bollinger over at Fox 5 asked a great question. I thought he said, you know, last week you said on Thursday it was the best practice of the season, and then you know Sunday happened. So, and he was asking the question. So, how do you determine what's a good week of practice now? Or do you just have to wait till you find out on
sure.
Sunday?
After that outcome, how do you determine
and
a good practice?
And he sits there and goes, well, I'm never going to say that again. So.
Yeah, right.
And you just talk. And again, transparency. And it was funny at the time. We can laugh a little bit now. But he goes, I'm not gonna bite my tongue. I'm not going to go back on my words. It was the best practice we had to date
he
that Thursday.
He also said the practice before the Ravens game was the worst.
Right. That,
you know what I'm saying? So he said that yesterday.
And he goes, but I'm not going to tell you that when we have a bad practice
right.
either.
And talking about full disclosure now, I think some of the lessons that he's learned, I asked, you know, Devontae yesterday, okay, you know, are you curious about how everyone's going to respond coming off a game that you came off of? That's the big test that they're facing. And he's like, yeah, absolutely. But I go, what are your expectations? I don't have any expectations. Like, so it immediately – you know, drove home what we were talking about. What are your expectations? He says, I don't know.
I think he's just listening to us.
I you know what I'm saying? Like that's it's kind of a problem when you think about it. He has no real expectations because there's no track record of this team proving it one way or another. Now we're in week three, so it makes sense to some extent, but there's a lot of teams out here that have been doing it for a long time together that they kind of know, well, this is usually our typical response to this situation. But Devontae's like, and he just basically said, I don't know.
In line with what Antonio was saying when he says, you know, we had the best practice on Thursday, had a great practice Friday, good walkthrough, good meeting on Saturday, and then Sunday happened.
Didn't mean squat.
So in terms of expectations, yeah, I mean, throw them all out the window. And I thought that was great when he said, you know, I thought the practice before the Ravens game was terrible.
Yeah.
And look what we did and showed up on
right.
Sunday. So
it all comes down to the final test, which is on Sundays. And we don't have enough of a track record with this team and really this head coach to fully understand
what the response is.
What? How they're?
We think we know what the response is going to be.
I don't even know if I think. I don't. I'm clueless.
Okay. Well, I think the response is going to be a fired up unit, and I don't know if that's much of a hot take considering what we saw on Sunday, but I do think we're going to see a much more inspired looking team step on the field on Sunday. What that relates to
that's
a score
what I'm talking
doesn't,
about.
Doesn't. I mean,
that's more what I'm talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah,
the result. I don't the. Guys banging their heads against the locker, running out there, high-fiving, being all fired up. You know, that's I am curious about that.
Well,
too.
I do
but,
think that
but
is.
What does that actually
I do think
mean?
That would be a step in the direction, or the right step in a direction, step in the right direction, considering how lackluster it was on Sunday. And again, with the fact that with an Antonio Pierce-led team, we never even thought that was an option.
I felt like everything was fired up to start Sunday's game. It was loud in there. I saw the players doing their. Everybody
was loud on the. It was
no,
loud in
even
the stadium.
But I'm talking about the players were inspired too. I saw a lot of body language that I liked.
Antonio Pierce said from the opening drive,
"Yeah,
he's like,
because
oh,
they got
something,
it stuffed up their ear.
Something was not right."
But was it about inspiration or just they got physically beat? I don't know. Like
I'm
I don't know where
that
line. Not
in the minds of those players, but yeah. it didn't look like they were. It did not look like
fair
it.
Fair enough.
Robert Spillane, weeks 1 through 3, was flying everywhere. I didn't necessarily see the heat-seeking missile I saw week 1. Now, again, and is that fair for anyone to expect somebody to do that for 17
well,
straight weeks? But you
also,
get what I mean? Like,
also, I mean, if there's one guy on the team that I would never question his fired up in this, it would be Robert Spillane because he brings it every day.
And
so,
I'm not questioning.
No, I know you're not.
That's not me subtly doing. I'm just saying, like, you didn't see the same vigor throughout the entire team, starting on defense. And Antonio Pierce said it yesterday. He's like, I knew things were off the rails on the opening drive.
Yeah.
The offense hadn't even taken the field. He couldn't even point to anything on the offense yet, but he looked at what the defense just put on tape on that first drive, and he literally goes, uh-oh.
Yeah. Well, I think everybody did.
And that's a problem.
And I think for a defensive-minded head coach like Antonio Pierce, perhaps the inspiration, the inspired play helps the defense more than the offense you would hope for Sunday.
You were fully, here's the word, expected. You fully expected the defense to, with Andy Dalton as the quarterback, to get after it, you know, force a punt. Now the offense, the place is flying. And it was loud at Allegiant Stadium and build off that and have a nice, easy afternoon at Allegiant Stadium. But then they got stuffed right down the field in every imaginable way with not being able to stop the run, wide open spaces in the field in the passing game, gashed, physically punished, give up a quick touchdown, and then it was all downhill from there. And as Antonio said, he had that uneasy feeling watching that.
He didn't say it, but
that's
it was literal. It was literal. Uh oh.
Right. I knew.
This is the first drive.
You
five
know what he
in.
Was feeling. He's like, oh, what the hell is going on here? Which is what everybody in the building was thinking.
And especially if he's going off of the man, practice was so good on Thursday. We followed up so good on Friday, and then he's like, what am I looking at? What? And he has the same reaction. Everybody in the stadium. Everybody on. What are we watching right now? What are we looking at?
Yeah, and they had the makings of the get-right game, of where you're like, all right, everything's now
in
motion.
They were right.
Everything should be all in place. We have all the evidence and indicators that I have seen before as a player on championship teams. This is going to be the result.
It was supposed to be a build-off from what was right. Not get-right. They were already right on that fourth quarter against the Ravens. It was supposed to be build-off that. Get to 2-1. Now the Cleveland Browns are coming to town. 3-1 looks pretty doable right now. All of it got wasted, and I don't know if it was inspiration. I don't know. Like you said, we're not in their heads. Were they fired up? Were they too fired up? But whatever it was, they just weren't. Whatever they ended up, however they ended up playing, was just not good enough, and they got their hats handed to them.
What's your inspirational movie?
Inspirational movie?
Between Rocky or Gladiator?
Yeah, probably Rocky. Rocky, but I don't. Yeah. Oh, you're yeah. Rocky definitely gets me inspired, but
you need to watch Rocky Saturday
night. I'm always fired up, man. I'm always fired up.
We weren't lackluster in that press box. We were eating East Carolina sliders with coleslaw.
Oh, I'll tell you what, tonight, though, a special curated menu at Chickies and Pete's because it's Dallas, the Cowboys against the New York Giants. Oh. They have crab and street corn nachos. And that's for the Dallas fan inside you. And the pastrami burger for the New York fan. Oh, we got it all at Chickies and Pete's. Come see, say hello. I'm there from 5 to 8 tonight for Thursday Night Football. The 50 massive screens, free parking, and the great food and drinks. Come and say hello. I got great prizes, Raider Nation Radio, shirts and swag. And right now, you could be caller 9 and get hooked up with greatness just from the morning tailgate.
What?
Ron White is coming into town to the Cosmo inside the Chelsea Theater. Great spot to watch comedians. And the tickets are for Friday, October 4th. Be caller number 9, 702-365-9200. It's the...
How are we wrapping up hour number one already here on the morning tailgate? That was a doozy of an hour.
It was.
We ended the last segment. Inspirational movies. Did you give an answer?
I'd say Rocky, I guess. I'm not, you know.
But the first one.
Like, I'd have to go. Yeah, the first one is, to me, it's
creme de la creme.
Yeah. And I'd have to go back to, because there's not, like, what do you need to get fired up about nowadays? Like, I remember when I was in high school and we would watch, you know, our movie, our, like, for us, more music, you know, Queen with We Are the Champions, yeah. That was the song, you know, to play.
We Will then Rock became, You gets the blood boiling a little bit.
More, yeah, We Are the Champions.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you? I mean, Clay? I'm just thinking of other, you know what, other songs.
You know what movie does kind of get me over the years? It's like... watching The Natural and the Roy Hobbs thing is like, okay. I don't know why towards the end.
It's just that one scene, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't know why that gets me so much. But out of the Rockies, I still love Rocky IV just because.
The Russian.
Yeah, growing up, our Boy Scout leader was so like, you have to be better than your Russian equivalent. You know, just a bunch of you little boys standing there. You know, he was a.
Political.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. He was a vet. He did like 2 tours in Laos. He was definitely going to make sure that he was going to have a group of young soldiers to go with.
Red Dawn was a pretty, I always felt like it. If you're talking about it along those lines.
Like right, the 80s Cold War movies. Yeah.
The kids had to win the war, you know.
Sure, Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, yeah, it's tough to beat the
Wolverines.
The in the mountains training scene. Superimposed with the Russian
technology.
Like, they
had to get as far away from Moscow as possible.
Yeah, that was pretty... But, I mean, again, the Rockies are great. The Rocky movies are fantastic. But how do you not get out of your seat for the beach scene?
Right.
Carl Weathers, former Raider. Mm-hmm. Once a Raider, always a Raider, Vinny. Now, as I was thinking about that, I was like, is Rocky on the firmer sand? And is Apollo on... How did... Turns out.
What are we saying?
Think
here?
About that. The beach.
So, well, like I was distorted. So
I thought there was a distorted reality of who was actually faster.
So maybe they weren't. Oh, I see.
Spoiler alert.
Maybe they weren't even
in
filmed.
Rocky. Apollo and Rocky race on the beach.
Yeah. Right, because Apollo takes over as his trainer
and Apollo crushes him every time, and Rocky just can't hang. Can't hang.
What's the matter with you?
Tomorrow.
Italians are not
tomorrow.
Known for.
There is no tomorrow. There is no tomorrow. There is no tomorrow.
Italians aren't known amazing. For their speed.
Well, turns out. So I questioned in my mind, because it's been a while since I've watched that one. Well, was Apollo on the firmer sand, closer to the water? So, of course, he was going to be faster. Turns out, nah.
Mm.
Rocky was. So he was just slow early on. And then but he built it up.
He did, too. You know, he had a challenge. And that was the point of like, all right, now I'm ready to face Clubber Lang.
Clay, you laughed at me when I say Gladiator. How dare you? That is an inspirational. That one gets...
I was laughing at Gladiator.
Oh, you laughed.
I laughed.
At Maximus Aurelius. You laughed at him.
That movie is not funny. That is serious business, that movie.
The scene where he goes back home and his family, everything's burned. Then he goes... Oh.
Seriously, that is inspiring. What about you, Vince? Is it a Rocky movie? Is it a...
Rudy was good.
Rudy was good.
Yeah.
You know what gets me fired up?
Mm.
The Replacements. When they sing Gloria Gaynor.
Yep, the bonding moment.
That is a moment.
That's a bonding moment.
That is a moment unlike anything in cinema.
Yeah.
You refute that.
Yeah, that was a movie that I've jumped in on. I never went out and, yeah.
Keanu.
I don't, football movies.
Shane Falco,
football
baby.
Football movies for the most part have been real bad, lackluster.
What?
Yeah.
How dare you?
Yeah.
Shane Falco.
Mm.
Talk about a redemption story.
It was, you know, as Sylvester Stallone I remember him listening to himself do an interview about the original Rocky. And this was like just a couple of years ago that they played back the tapes that he did with a reporter from the New York Times. And the New York Times reporter asked young Sylvester Stallone, well, what's the story here? Well, it's about this. And Sylvester Stallone is there listening going, say what it is. It's a love story. It's a love story, Sylvester. Just say it. Why was I so resistant to saying it? It was a love story. And at the end, at the very end, I mean, it was a lot of different stories molded into one. But, you know, with the girlfriend and everything like that, that's what it ultimately
It's funny, like, how some guys, like...
I couldn't say it. He goes, can you imagine? Like, I could not say that.
Well, like, sometimes movies take on different meaning. Like, songs like Pete Townsend of The Who, he's like... The songs I wrote in the 60s, like my generation, they now have a different meaning
right.
now.
Yeah.
So what I was thinking then, I wasn't thinking the same thing 40 years down the road.
Right.
Oh, real quick to cap off the first hour, we were talking about which college players had they stuck around.
Yeah.
Would they have made the money? Doug in the 970 says Bo Jackson would have taken the bag in college. Yeah. Could you imagine 1984 Auburn money?
Right.
Would you, what $1 million would have meant
right.
in 1984 dollars?
Bo.
Right.
Bo.
And then Frank Thomas would have to make that too. You know, because he's like, hey, I'm playing tight end here and hitting home runs. Let's go. I'm a two-sport athlete.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, you know, obviously football players are you know, what we were talking about. But now I'm trying to think of, like, who else would have, in other sports, would have gone just the college route to make just buku bank if.
What if it was revealed that the reason why Matt Leinart stayed for that senior year, you know, like, because it's like, oh, okay, you know, I would understand that. Now that's justified. You stay then. Good.
I've literally had conversations about with Matt about that. And, like, it was a step down. I don't know about obviously not money, but he goes, it was a step down going from USC to the Cardinals. Like, we were it in Los Angeles.
It was gold.
We could go to any club. We were on a pedestal. We were the kings of Los Angeles because there was no pro football team in Los Angeles. So it was a little bit of an adjustment, you know, going to Arizona. He got paid, obviously, by the Cardinals. And I think that it kind of affected his whole NFL career because I'm sure if he looks back now, he would have probably handled some things a little bit differently as an Arizona Cardinal, but it was sort of like, wow, this is less than what I was. I mean, imagine going from USC to the Cardinals. Or where would you put them in the whole scheme of things? Like their national, you know, brand is probably like the Chargers ish, I would say. And I'm not trying to disparage the Chargers, but Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, it's flatter than day-old beer.
Right?
You know, there's no edge or no pop to any of it. All right, we'll take a look at Lincoln Kennedy's comments. He joins us next here on Raider Nation Radio.